go ahead and get started. We have exactly 7 o'clock, our meeting for tonight, February 2nd, 2018. We are going to start with a pledge given by Chandler Goodwin, and then the invocation will be given by myself.
Will the audience please rise? Please repeat the Pledge of Allegiance after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful for the opportunity to meet together tonight as residents of this wonderful community. We are grateful for the passion that we have for the community that we live in. We're grateful for the people who are here tonight and for so many who are willing to serve. We ask you to bless us this evening, that we will be able to perform the city's business with respect, and that we will be able to accomplish the needs of the city as the residents of our city would so desire. And we pray for these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen. All right, so the next item on our agenda is public comment. I don't see that anybody signed up, so we will close that portion and move on to, oh, I'm sorry, any approval of the agenda for tonight. I'm going to approve tonight's agenda.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so now we'll go on to item number four, which is city reports and business, and we'll start with Mr. Goodwin.
I don't have much. It's been a quiet Christmas break. Staffing, we are working to prepare the preliminary budget. And council, as you know, we have a February 10th city council retreat where we will meet at the Highland Fire Station. Please put that on your calendars. That's where we set the priorities for the upcoming year. And second, with all of the candidates that are here tonight, I wanted to put a plug in for a couple vacancies that we have. We do have a vacancy on the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustments, so 10 of you can consider those. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Davis?
I don't think I report.
Okay, Councilmember Anderson?
I have nothing to report.
Councilmember Bailey?
No, nothing.
I'm assuming Councilmember Elliott. All right, and so for me, I'll try to make this short. I did attend a MAC meeting on December 14th. I was there as an attendee. I was not serving any capacity at that point. The commission did speak about the 3/4 cent sales tax, which I know we've had some discussions about already. The basic conflict that seems to exist is that there's the 3/4 cent sales tax that is in place that allows the county to collect funds, but those funds have to be used after the project has been approved by MAD, by the NPO. And we're in a position right now where the county feels that after a project has been approved by the NPO, they can choose to reject the project. And the NPO feels that the way that the law is written, because it has to be approval from the NPO, once it's approved, the county can't, you know, they can't unilaterally overrule the NPO and deny those projects. And so what Commissioner Lee is suggesting is that the county repeal that tax and then have each individual city implement it and then just give the funds to the NPO. So the NPO, Mayor Brunt, the forum, is actually working with Representative Stoddarson on regards to coming to state legislature to clarify that particular piece of state code on what the state intended. Could an individual entity within the NPO overrule the NPO overall? So that is going to be discussed at this legislative session, and hopefully we'll have some more clarification at that point. I did ask if the county could decide by themselves to revoke that tax, as has been threatened by Commissioner Lee, and the answer I received was no. It would have to actually go to a vote of the residents. It went to a vote of the residents to be approved. It would have to go to a vote of the county residents to be revoked as well. So I will keep you informed on that as we continue to meet at All right, we'll move on to item number six, which is the review of city council applications. And so I'm going to ask that those who are here for the city council interviews of candidates, if you would please sit in the front row so we can easily identify you. And this is how we're going to proceed tonight. So we're going to give each candidate a minute and a half to make an introduction to the And Councilmember Geddes is going to have his timer up so that we can see what your time, how much time you have left. After introductions, then we'll open it up to the council to ask questions. Each candidate will have a minute to answer that question. After the first four questions, I will ask the council to please narrow down to the three candidates that they want to continue with questions, and they will vote on that. And when we have the top three, then the council will continue asking questions until they know they've received answers to everything that they're looking for, and then they will vote on a candidate that they're listing to see the two-year vacancy. Any questions on that? How are we going to handle that? Okay. Oh, sorry.
The only thing is, on my timer, I can't do even minutes.
Oh, you can do. Let's do two minute introduction. We'll just do that. That'll make it easy.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
How do I get?
You can't.
I don't think I can, right?
That's okay. 2 minutes is fine. Okay. So, how about for introductions? We'll go ahead and start here on the left hand side and then just work our way down. So, Mr. Crosby, you're up.
You said 2 minutes?
2 minutes, yes. Maybe you could just come to the... Do you want to go to the podium?
Yeah, please, at the podium.
So, we can go to the podium so that
way the recording can take up. My name is Chris Crosby. I'm 8835 North Midland Drive. We've lived there about 10 years. My wife and I have 6 boys and 5 girls, 1 grandchild. They don't all live in Cedar Hills. Otherwise, maybe I could have gotten away. The reason I signed up, I recognize that some of you know the length of this problem. I feel like it's a duty to participate. I've got an uncle and a number of uncles, one that died in the war. Another, a whole bunch of us suffered, so I feel it's my duty to participate in what I call the American experiment. And so that's why I'm here, that and I'm going to grant you. I don't think there's anything else for this.
Mr. Thomas?
Steve Thomas, I live at 10152 North Pinion Drive. Lived here about 3 years. Moved here from Texas to DC and a couple other places. I love Cedar Hills. We've looked all over Utah County and part of Salt Lake County, and this is the only place we felt right about moving, so that was a good plug for the city. One thing I love about the city is the parks, the open spaces. The way that development is not as quick here as it is other places. It's not as overcrowded as a lot of other places in the county too. I think keeping that character that's been built into the city is pretty important. I know there are a lot of important issues coming up, the development of the canyon, again, parks and recreation. There's lots of planning issues that come up with commercial development, all these things that are important to me. A little bit of my background, I went to school for urban planning. So I've got a master's degree in urban planning. I've been all over the place working on those kinds of issues. I work for the power company, do energy efficiency work for them. So sustainability is an important part of my life, and I think that should be built into everything that we do. I have kids that, that's the reason we moved here is my kids are happy and they love it. And I want to keep the character of Cedar Hills the way it is. So any way I can get involved, I've been on the Planning Commission since right after we moved here, and I've really enjoyed that and involved in the public dialogue. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Plante?
I'm Greg Clinton. I live 4114 West and 15 North Transfer Hills. We moved here in, I don't know, a long time ago, 15 years ago. Enjoyed living in Cedar Hills. My wife and I both grew up in Alpine, so we are not too far from home. And we've always enjoyed my Utah County. I've been on the Planning Commission for the last while, 11 years, and I've enjoyed participating in the process that is. Residents and the people in Cedar Hills, and looking forward to the next decade or so as Deerhills continues to finish growing and decide what we're going to or might be and want to participate in that.
Mr.
Kirkpatrick?
My name is David Kirkpatrick. I live at 10461 North St. Vista Lane. As I stated in my application, I lived here in Cedar Hills when it first began in 1977 and stayed here to 83 and was transferred by a job that I had at that time to Denver, Colorado. My wife and I went to Seattle. And in 2004, we were presented with the opportunity to make a choice of where we wanted to live, not related to jobs or family or anything like that. And there wasn't hesitation or thoughts that we wanted to come back and see the hill. And so we did in 2004, and it's our intent to stay here until. And we watched the city grow as we, internet came down. We watched things through that venue. Plus, every time we were in Utah, we came down for a visit to see what was going on. And so we love this community. We had the opportunity to raise our children up until the time we moved to Denver. It was probably the best place we lived in terms of raising a family. I'm grateful for the service that you give, and I know that this would also require time and effort to put what I have at an international basis. The church calling that took up a lot of time, and I'm not going to set this time. I feel it would be a good time and opportunity to serve. But I have some, looking at what the new councilman would be, the council person would be assigned, that fits kind of in what I was doing. Prior to coming here, I was a facilities manager for an LDS church property in Washington State called Morningside Farms. And I was with Morgan Horsemeyer, who was donated to the church. And we worked with BYU Idaho and we developed their problems. They did their inputs and also all the six work. And it was a very enjoyable thing. And we worked hard at it and got to. It's a point where we turn it over to church services. So I've got this opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Miller?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller?
I'm Brian Miller. I live at 10509 St. Vista in Cedar Hills. I really hope that you consider me for the city council appointment. I've dedicated countless hours since moving here. Towards serving in our city. I believe that I've shown good judgment along the way. I sacrificed my 2015 city council campaign in order to help preserve open space and make sure that the best people got on council. I've been here since 2014. This is our fourth year here. I started off serving on the Citizens Advisory Committee for the General Plan. And then took the opportunity to join the Planning Commission, in which I've served for the last 2 years. I've served pretty much at every opportunity that I've been given here in the city. You can find me at the roundabout, the City Service Day. You can find me planting tulips with the Beautification Committee. You can find me at the Info Booth, the Family Festival. I'm very passionate and committed to the city. In fact, this past election, I took the initiative of heading up the education campaign for the park tax that failed last year, and it made a difference, and it passed this year. That has secured approximately $500,000 of funding for parks and arts and recreation for our city over the next 10 years. That's money that we didn't have. And that was at a sacrifice for me and my time because I love this city. I'm a city attorney for another city, so I have experience advising councils. I have experience in land use. I'm a known quantity. You guys know what I'm about. You guys know my reason, my judgment, that I can respectfully disagree and state my position. I think that I bring the most to the table and would appreciate the support tonight. Thank you.
Kelly Smith, we live at 9037 Silver Lake Drive, and we've been in Cedar Hills for 3 years. Before that, we were in American Park for 21, and when we looked around to see where we wanted to retire. Our mentor asked us what we wanted to do with our rocking chair, so we chose Cedar Hills, and we looked for a long time. It was really a hard decision to make when I was in So there, I was heavily involved. I've been the American Fork Council PTA president, so I supervised all seven schools and their volunteers for years. And I sat on the Still Days Committee and the American Fork, and I'm a county delegate. And then I did, I was on the Parks Board for 10 years. So we supervised, oversaw the parks, but also the rec center. So I know a lot about what it takes to have a rec center and run a rec center, and whether that's or not that's a good thing for Cedar Hills. And headed up their park, what Brian was talking about, I headed that up for American Fork and helped them have that the last few years up before our move. I also do a lot of social media for American Fork that we started a city page right before our move, and 3 years we've done that to 5,000 people. And so I got a lot of experience with social media too. So I'd like to take that experience from American Fork and apply it to here in Cedar Hills, where we hope to be for a really long time. I do have a lot of great working relationship with the American Fork City Council and with our mayor. I've also legislate and advocate for education at the Hill, and so I have a good working relationship with Senator Kemmert and Representative Kennedy and some of those things. I know a little bit about legislation and some of those things about cooperating with our county and our state government to do some things in Cedar Hills. So I enjoy the opportunity to be on the council.
My name is Craig Hansen. I've been in Cedar Hills just about 5 years. I live at 4049 West Cypress. And I know we're only halfway done, but there's good candidates. I feel good about who's here representing Blaine. We moved here, I have two little girls. We couldn't have picked a better city to move to. They absolutely love it. And if you ever drive through the neighborhood, beginning July through winter, you'll see me in my spotting scope, checking out what's up on the mountainside. I love the city, it just kind of melds with the natural surroundings. That's part of the reason why I wanted to fight and be on city council, is I want to ensure a unique character of the city survives as we go through transition over the next 10 years. I served with Brian Miller on the agenda plan committee, and also right now on the Board of Adjustments. And I just feel we have opportunities to serve, we need to stand up and serve. Too many people sit back and let people do it for them. I'm not going to do that. So I love the city. I'm glad we have so many talented and able candidates here tonight. And I'm looking forward to your decision.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Maurice Mandel. Council members and the mayor, and I think third time's a charm. were we supposed to say our address?
Yeah,
I just felt like it just started.
No, you're fine.
Okay, good. Well, I think a lot of people here know me, they run recently, and this time I did not forget the deadline, so I'm here. What I'm saying is that I don't give up. I really love the city, and I had a great opportunity for the last almost 10 months to really get a feel for what people are thinking around the community. I got to meet a lot of you, I talked to all of you, but more importantly, I got to talk to the rest of Cedar Hills. I mean, literally door by door, phone calls and all that, and that was just a great experience. So what I noticed then, first off, we have a great city, a very involved city, so that's wonderful. But I do feel like there's some people who felt that they weren't being represented, and I just wanted to be there for those people. Not that I could be an opposing voice, I just love to look at everything from every perspective, every angle, weigh our options, make sure that we are doing what's best for the entire city. It was fun. I hope to do so and to offer that. And as you can see, I don't. I guess this was a little microcosm. I don't just follow it. That's just how I'm going to be. But I hope to offer that perspective to influence through. I believe in improving, and I'm not fine with that sequence here. I just love to talk things out. And I believe communication is key, and I hope that we can continue to do that. I felt like it was a great meeting of the social media, and I think that's something social media and I think that's something to work on a little bit. And I hope the rest of the council can also work on that. Just to hear the rest of the city. And anyway, we've heard enough of you for the last 5-6 months for sure, but thank you for the opportunity again.
My name is Thomas Reams. Fairly new here to the city, but I've been here for about 3 years. And I spent a lot of my time serving in other capacities. A little bit about myself, I was an auditor for about a decade. A lot of my experience was with special service districts here in Colorado, all over the counties and cities. So I feel very comfortable when it comes to governmental entities, how they run. When I saw the opportunity to apply for this position, I thought that it was a great opportunity for me to give back to the community that I've grown to love. I don't have a lot of experience with you, but I'm looking forward to sharing my talents with each and every one of you. Currently, I actually run several different large organizations, media, conglomerate, Rialto, which is another one that I work on the financial side. I have people that interest a lot of things to my care, and I feel like I can take a lot of my talents that I have and share them with my city. And I feel actually kind of grateful that there's other positions open, so I know it's all passed today, but I would appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
My name is Rob Morgan. I live over on Windsor Circle. We moved here in 2002. My lovely wife and myself. Maybe Dell looking at her and bringing it up and doing a face like this and all of that. It's very nice, but very passionate about our city, just like all the rest of us here are. I don't envy your choices here. I've been in the automotive industry for over 35 years. Most of that in management, running $100 million in sales revenue companies successfully. Last year, I started my own company. I do leadership training and customer service training. Started an academy and I do that here in Illinois State. And I'm very passionate about our city. And one of the reasons that I wanted to run for city council, I've thought about it forever, but I never have. I've always voted. Because I don't envy the job that you have, and I think you do a wonderful job. I think the last couple of years, unfortunately, the passive majority in our society are getting left behind. Both the minority are running things, and I think that's unfortunate. And it's got to start at the level of city councils. When I have no designs to go any further than that, I'm not too old for that, but I hope to serve on the city council, like I said. I've been in leadership positions. I'm not arrogant enough to think that I'm correct all the time, but I am vocal. I will voice my opinion, but I can be changed. My mind can be changed. I love an opportunity to serve. Thanks.
I'm J.D. Bress. I've lived in Cedar Hill for 26 years as well. We moved up here in the old part of town when we were pretty scarce out here behind us, the gravel pit and some out of the canyon. We were where all my kids grew up. I've been an honored chair of quarterback, so to speak, for city government for many years. As I've sat back and watched my friends and the conservative citizens leadership, the mayor and the council, discuss with them the things that have gone on. I had other commitments that kept me away from that. I mentioned my application to work with the police department. The time is now right where I can learn some skills. Because I started my first business at age 6. I've been a businessman, entrepreneur. I work in commercial real estate, negotiated deals in excess of $40 million to interview and hire hundreds of people before. I'm a good judge of character. I think I have some skills and abilities that are needed here on the city. I look back, sometimes I see some of the rookie mistakes the city continues to make. I think if we did some things differently, we had some leadership in the city. Not that we don't have leadership now, I don't take that wrong. But some additional leadership skills that can help us move to the next level. Some of the conflict and things we have in the city, I think, are because we don't handle things well as we do. I think I have the skill set of being able to negotiate and sit down with other people and come to consensus, as I've done my whole career, that I would love to lead the city at this time. I appreciate your service and what you've done for the city. I appreciate being able to be considered for this position as we move the great city of Cedar Hills that we love so much to next month. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goodwin, will that microphone come down? Would it stretch from side to side so that way that they can just pass it down instead of having to keep coming up to the podium?
Just swap over the bends.
As long as they speak into the microphone when they do it.
This one? Yeah,
well,
it's got a long cord. The very last one.
We'll do that, and that way people won't keep walking up here and save a little bit of time. All right.
We're
going to
start.
We can start the elect again. So at this point, I'm going to open it up to the council to ask questions. Candidates will have 1 minute to respond to those questions. And then, like I said, after about four, sooner if you feel ready, but after the fourth question at the latest, we will have a council narrow it down to three. So the time is yours, council.
Can I ask a question first?
Yes,
sir. Obviously, we have a lot of issues in the city that require attention by the council. And one of the ones that's been less and less divisive over time, but it's been the golf course. And I'm probably the most passionate on the council as far as golf is concerned. So I'm going to ask a golf question, but I'm going to ask a little different. I would like to know from each one of the candidates, if you read the golf committee's report that we prepared last year and then summarized. And if you agree with it or disagree, and what would you have changed if you had been on that committee? Let me start with Mr. Crosby.
I did agree with the whole narrative part of it. I agree with it, I think it's hard to say that I agree with everything that was in there. I think it was a good attempt to bring the issues out, which is important. What were the other parts of the question?
And then if you disagreed, or what would you have added to it if you had been on that committee?
I don't know that I'd have added anything. I mean, there are a number of people there. I think personally the issue of the overwhelming debt that the city has is a key thing for me, and that I think we all feel like it's important to retire or at least try to go in the right direction when it comes to that. I think everybody agrees there. It's just trying to get it done. I think that's pretty much all I can say on that.
I did not read the report. So.
Do you have any comments?
Not necessarily.
I attended most of the meetings that were held, and it was very interesting. A lot of interesting information came out. It was kind of good for me to see the history, because I got here right just as the city acquired developers. I hadn't been familiar with a lot of the initial stuff. I felt like the developers really did a great job. A lot of information was gone through. There was options that were discussed, and I feel like that should be behind us now. The city owns the golf course, and we've got to make it work, and we need to make it, do our best for what we've got. And whether it's an asset or liability, doesn't matter. We've got it. We need to make it work.
Thank you.
I did read the report, and the two things that the golf course committee that came to conclusion with, I agreed with, and that was one, that we weren't in a position where we needed to sell an asset, and the debt was well as managed as best as it could be. Grateful that the city council jumped on the opportunity to refinance that bond, saving us a lot of money, and you won't see that interest rate. I mean, those are, what is it, about 2.5% or something.
Yeah, we'll get that low again for a while.
I like golf, and I lived in a community where public courses were readily available and affordable, and I was drawn back to Cedar Hills because I wanted to be here. But the golf course, was an added bonus, and I appreciate it being maintained. hopefully we'll review more. But I think that they did a good job and were very thorough. Came to the best conclusion.
I also read the report and I agreed with the findings. I also attended several of the meetings and was a member of a group that really pushed for the preservation of that when we had some council candidates that opposed it. I think what's important with that is that we got true and accurate numbers by a committee that really did put in a lot of hard work. We had Councilman Crawley who was coming up with his own numbers that disputed those numbers. And it was good to have an objective committee that went through a process, a public process, to show what the actual numbers are, to show exactly how much does this cost the city, how much does it cost each individual family. Are there other options that are feasible? I support the golf course 100%. I have views of it from my home. I'm not a big golfer, but I love the open space. I love seeing the green, not having houses next to each other in such tight quarters throughout the city. I think that the council did it. The committee did an excellent job.
Hey, I also read the report. One thing I disagree with you is I have the biggest golf enthusiast that lives at my house. None of the city members can attest. And so we were really interested in what was going on with the golf course when we moved here. And so we took a good look at it. And I looked a lot of what was going on social media. So I really wanted to see the report to see what we had come up with. And so I agreed with the findings. I also thought it was very thorough and appreciated all the detail that they went into for us. And then since, you know, follow the reduction from about 10% to about 2.74 where we're at, which is great. And I think that we can handle it as well. It is an asset for our community and for a lot of people for that. And we also have some obligations to run it well and to finish it off and to pay the bond off and to finish the commitment that we have.
Can we take the mic around the other side so there's slack to get to the other end? Thanks.
So I did read the report because it's been quite a while ago, the time I read it. But I'm also a big golf course supporter. And I'll kind of echo what Mr. Clement said. The golf course is here. It is an asset to our community. The job is to counsel the best we can to pay off the debt and to keep it as an asset. As for what I would have done differently if I was on the committee, I don't know. I don't know. By nature, I was very thorough, and I thought that the report put the information out there that could be important. So I just put it out to that. And,
thank you.
You know, I think I dreamt about the golf course for the past few months. And I definitely read the report. I talked to a lot of people. I also read, you know, Mr. Crawley's analysis and all that, and so it's good to see some different angles. Whether or not it's accurate or not, I mean, I'm not an expert in it, so I don't know. But, you know, what I do think is that the golf course is here, and it's ours, and we have to make the most of it right now. It is not, I know from my commercial experience, it's just not the time to sell it if we could, and so it's just not even people bringing up, hey, we should sell the section out. But a lot of people don't want to see it broken up. I don't want to see it broken up. I know it's a huge, beautiful part of our city. But I also know that, you know, I don't like city zoning businesses or things like that. And so if we could get that, that'd be great. Of course, I don't think anyone here, I think we all want to see it stay here. I do too. But I think that means that whenever we look at other projects and so forth, we got to take that into consideration and be mindful of that. But I think we're all on the same.
I think that generally is part of our duty and the position that you're in is to get the best information to make the best decision possible. And I think as far as the golf course is concerned, I know that's been up for debate a lot in the community. And I think that that's something that, as far as the council has done, a pretty good job as far as assessing where they stand. I think that I echo a lot of what everyone said here when it comes to an asset like that, especially for a municipality. You have to look at kind of what the drag is on the populace. And I think that they did a great job with that. And then going forward, definitely, when we look at those kind of things, we need to look at the impact it will have on our community and what are the costs.
I did read the report, but I've lived there since 2002, which is quite a long time, so I've been paying for a golf course for a while. I'll continue to pay for it. It's not going anywhere. I think, unfortunately, it's been a contentious part of our city since I've been here. I can't remember ever my neighborhood not talking about the golf course. I love the golf, and unfortunately, for me, it costs me the same golf there as it does somebody who lives in Circle Springs on a Saturday morning. I think that's one of the things we should look at to take care of the residents. But as I said, I've been paying for it since 2002. I'm going to pay for it for another 20 years, I'm sure. But I think that our city council has done the best they can do with it. And I would continue to look at it that way.
I agree, and I echo the remarks that Louis did. It's been a lot of time though since I read the report, so I can't discuss in detail. However, I do remember that I think the council is on the right steps for the golf course. It's one of the things we've done right. We financed the event. There's a tremendous asset to our community, whether it's golf or not. And I think it would be a huge disservice to change that maybe you ask your citizens along the way. I'm supporting the golf course, even though for years I didn't golf, but still adds to our community and has been part of the community. So I'm a big supporter of the golf course.
We can start this and then back up with our question. Okay, council, another question? I have another question. So the city recently acquired the Harvey property just east of Deerfield Elementary, and we're going to be putting a park there, but we don't have all the money to put the park in right now. So I'm curious to know how you would propose to finance the park. Something you want to happen quickly and bond, or what would you propose to be something to make that part happen? We've been waiting a long time for it, and we need to find out somewhere to finance it. So what are some of your ideas on how to finance that part, or the timeline that should be financed?
The state will have time to acquire the land for the park, and it may take a long time for it to get either for the golf park that we've got. I think a phased approach into the park, where it can be doing initially along the way, which you would do with some enjoyment before it is a full-fledged park. It's listening through a donation of kind work and trying to make it back around when it becomes a community project. You know, to put the park together kind of like we did in the old days when we had house raising park. I think there are assets and resources that we can use to put to that park and enjoy it along the path until such times it becomes a full-fledged park.
I think it would be beneficial to find out what 5,000, 6,000 registered voters in our city would want. Personally, I'd like to get started quickly, but if it's financially not feasible, we shouldn't do it. But if the city wants, our citizens want to do it, want to bond it or however they want to pay for it, then sure. But it should be a decision that we get their input as a and then you as a council make that decision.
It's kind of the same answer as kind of the golf course. I'm understanding what the financial driver, what's the scope of that, what would it cost, and what are we looking at as far as the park? There's different things we put on there, pavilions or not, just kind of getting the scope of the financial impact on our community. And then from there, we can kind of put it out, like you said, to the people in our city. This is what we're looking at, these are options that we have. Get some public comment, looking at a bond or other options that we're exploring. Get the feedback from the community. Then that way we can make the best decision for them, since they're representatives for our community.
Yeah, I think as a city council, we're representing people who don't know what we want to do. But we also know it's pretty hard to look in there. That's one area that I think that we can work on. But to answer the question, I firmly believe on phasing it because that seems to make the most sense right now. People want to see the park, we have the land there. We've already approved those plans, right? What we have there is what's going to be there right now. That's all final. Okay. But it seems like a great project. It's a big project. But I do believe there's parts there that I think people would like to see now. I think we can focus on that and the other parts of this, I think you're a little 50-50 on the parts that we can do in the next couple of years, and then bond for the part that people live along the line. Something along those lines, but I am definitely of the fiscally responsible to careful with what we have. We've got the land, that was a big undertaking. We've got it now, but let's be careful with it. And of course, that's why you're asking, right? But I think that's the way to do it.
So I guess I have to begin with saying, I don't know, because this is just about my personality. I don't want to just spit some answer out without having been investigated the issue for you and understanding it. I know it's something that's been in the works for a long time. On the north end of the city, we're probably a little more spoiled for us in the parks. Available to us in the south end, this is something that they're waiting for. So I don't know how I do it. It's going to be part of investigating and seeing city finances around what options are available, and then to get the voice. So I would say that's something I would dive into, as much as I can, to input, talk to people, and then make a more informed decision than just the schematics of the show.
Okay, I saw the rendering, and the first thing that came to my mind was that I really appreciated that those were put together. And that we're trying to give this business an idea of what's there. And I know that came from a lot of input from citizens too. And so first of all, I really liked that. And I think that's the way that we're gonna get that done, is with that input from the citizens and from them feeling like a part of the process. And then if we need to bond, we're gonna be able to get them on board, because we've decided with the community what we want it to look like and how quickly we want to benefit from it. And so I think it's going to be a process, and it's important to be patient with the process, but I will be okay with the bond if you can do that, because that's the least part, and consider it on a really good path with that. And I love the rendering.
So two of the options would be to bond now or wait till the golf course is paid off and bond at that time. I'm in favor of bonding now. The city's waited a long time. This is what drives our community. What makes people want to be here is the open space, the parks, the offerings for families. We're a veteran community. This is where families live. I'm in favor of that. I think that if we show the residents that we've been conservative by reducing the debt and making our payments on the golf course and haven't been raising the property taxes barely at all, I think that we can show that, look, we've been conservative in order to put ourselves in the position to bond going forward. And I think that we'll be able to handle those additional taxes on bonding, and I think that benefit outweighs the cost to do it now. And I'd be in favor of phasing if that was an option as well.
I had an opportunity during the anniversary celebration to see that display. It was quite impressive. I understand that conceptual drawing was based on some input from the citizens, about 600 people were surveyed or responded to a survey. I think it would be a great asset for the city to have that, but I'm not necessarily going to say that I would want to bond first. I would see what we could do with what funding money may be available or that could be put together. I was trying to look here, I have a copy of the budget, and I was trying to quickly find some of the maturity dates were on some of the bonds, so that we could look at that funding becoming available into the city somehow. But I think it's a great park, it's going to be a great asset, a great location, and that, but I think we need to approach it where we are going to be much more in there.
I've been looking at that property for a long time, so I'm glad to take care of it. I'm in favor of a phased approach. I think bonding is a good option as long as we can communicate that to the citizens clearly. I think one of the problems with the golf course was that people didn't feel like they got the whole story initially. And I think if we can communicate, what the plan is and what we're getting into, and if people are okay with it, I think that's fine. It's, I borrowed money to build the
built my house because I didn't want to live in a tent or to do it. So I understand that, and you know, there's some of us who've been here a long time, and you know,
I'm not in favor of bonding to build a park. It's not going to produce revenue, and it's going to be additional debt when we've already got a lot. So when I was planning staff for a city, we had a trails and parks committee that did a lot of fundraising. We got grants and all kinds of things paid for a 5-mile greenway, and we were able to do that. I've been a development director for nonprofits for several years as well, and so there's other options rather than going into debt to finance a park. I think, like many of these other folks have said, that you know, our parks and our open space are a huge asset to the community. But I don't think that financing a park development is a good idea. Phasing is fine. I think that'll work great if there's no other options than just waiting it out and raising the money through taxes. But I think there are other options, and a lot of other options, whether that's, you know, private financing, or private funding, or you know, grants.
I'm not for bonding the city or the people anymore. My favorite thing about a park is the grandchildren and even grandparents there, and sometimes, at least when I look at them, I think, man, I don't want to put any more debt on them. As to my solution to, you know, help with the whole park situation, if you come up what I call Purple Turtle Road, just before you get where the road kind of comes up and almost into Cedar Hills, to the left there, there's a great park. And how they put that park together, when they originally did it, they had this nice big thermometer at the end of the street that said how much money they needed to get to, and as they raised the money by private contributions, they moved that little thermometer up. They also included a bunch of things like the gentleman on the end mentioned, and they had businesses and people, you know, contributing parts that they could do for the park. That's what I suggest. Thank you.
Our line's fairly straightforward. If you're chosen, what's the top priority you'd like to get done as a council member?
Start here again.
Yep.
Yeah. My top priority would be to help the city kind of do this, the kind of plan like Dave Ramsey talks about on the radio, that is, live within our means and pay off our debt so that we could stay where the
my top priority would be parks and open space, and then the general plan. All of those things are really important to make sure that not only we're, you know, preparing for the future, but that we have a concrete plan for it to maintain the character of the community.
One of my top priorities would be commercial district and the sale of the property that's pending going through city property there. I'm sure we can get a good development in there. And then one other thing that is concerned is Kent Road. I'm working with the county. That's going to be a big issue ongoing. I don't have the answers for that.
The top priority for me would be, as I mentioned, my application. I worked with Conrad on an ad hoc committee with two other cities for a while, looking at a way that we as cities, instead of going to American Fork and Pleasant Grove for recreational needs, could work together within the confines of the recreational district and through economy of scale and things of this nature. I've been in communities where this has worked before, and as opposed to think very more about the individual citizens, they provide pretty good benefits. I wouldn't have a problem if the stars were right on that to seeing our golf course become part of that recreational district. I've been in recreational districts where they've had golf courses, rec center, a combination of various things. Also, I agree with this thing with Cam and Rose, that I've always been working with him on the board.
For me, the priority would be the commercial zone. I think we're going to have a lot more interest with the east-west corridor, the Murdoch Trail Road, whatever we're calling it today. That's going to make it a lot easier for Highland residents and Redding Fork to get over to our city and spend the money. It's going to allow us to hopefully really develop it into a place that's, that people want to come, where it draws business from other cities, that our residents don't have to leave as often to go to other cities to buy what they need and what they want. And I'm happy about that and hopeful that connector will happen. And I think that's really going to help us and put us in a better position to further develop that commercial zone.
I agree with all those answers, and I am really concerned about commercial development too. I think we're in a unique place with the East-West Corridor coming in. We've got big decisions to make, and we want to be really careful about how we develop that commercial, balance, you know, the open space that we like and the residential space that we like to have. And so I think we're really crucial on that part. I also like to be a part of that as an impact, you know, that road comes through Harvey, where Jacob Elementary is. A lot of experience with the schools, and so I'd like to really look at how our schools are going to be impacted by that growth. They kind of have to deal with whatever we do, and so I'd like to be a part of that conversation too. So.
Thank you.
So I would not only echo the commercial district, like Ryan said, I think with the plans for the East West Road, it makes it a lot more attractive. I know in the past there's been some issues because of the location and the access to it, but the number one priority is developing the land that's available in the community. And then, second down would be the skating room. I drive that twice a day, and every day I say, this could be done. And I remember when I was in the Utah legislature, working in the center, seeing some issues with the state and federal with Highway 6. And it was always this or that, couldn't be done, couldn't be done. Well, you know, I was just up there, middle of December, and they're making it better. So I know even the hardest projects, there's a solution to this. Sometimes you have to be creative, sometimes you have to be tough. So, but the commercial district would be great.
So as many of you know, I definitely have already mentioned this before too, but not to be repetitive, but the commercial sector development, I think that helps with one of our concerns that our residents have with debt. And so a good way to generate revenue, a good way to also give options to our residents. And, you know, we're nicely tucked in this corner, you know, great location, we won't get bugged by a lot of people. But that also means that we don't get a lot of restaurants or a lot of options for us. And I think we owe it to our residents to have good options, but also that this would help be, wouldn't be the end all be all, but it would definitely help generate revenue, lessen the burden on our residents, and get out of that level, which I think we all want to get out of.
Unfortunately, and those are essentially the same two issues that I was thinking about as well. And when I was applying, these are the things that came to mind. For me, I think that, you know, I echo a lot of what people said here, but we are, you know, kind of tucked away, like you said, and that that district can, it can create, it's, the scope of it will help with our other issues with the park, with all these other problems that we're facing right now. And right now, I'm actually working with West Valley on Fairborn Station on 35th South, and they've come up with some very unique ways of kind of creating their own downtown. And those are the kind of things that for me, I think we can do here. Obviously, we're not going to have a nine-story building. I mean, that's just not who we are. But there are things that we can do to really generate that tax base so that we can bring in the funding, so we don't have to bootstrap up our parks and things like that. We can bring in, you know, money, these businesses. And the second is this Canyon Road. Everyone said everything on that. So
there are some advantages to being on him, but sometimes there isn't. I agree. My focus would be the commercial development. I think as well, so Canyon Road may be a close second to that. If we focus on that, the tax dollars will come in to help with building the park, to help with doing the road. So
community involvement in anything that we're doing. It just seems that people just feel like they just don't count, and that's unfortunate.
Share that same problem with me at the end of the road. I think I can boil mine down to quality of life. That's one of the major concerns I have. I think that the East West Corridor, Canyon Road, all those things help. The commercial district is key for me. What the commercial area said, I see that's one of the key for our city is to protect and to encourage that development through whatever benefits we can to the city through taxes or finance or whatever we'd like to do to encourage that growth inside our business district. Increasing that tax base so that we don't have to continue to tax our citizens for other things along the way. As we fix those roads and build the infrastructure and put those things in place, the business will come and we'll help out with that situation. It's a quality of life that we need to have.
Actually, I don't have any questions this time. I think you guys have covered everything I was going to ask about. This and that. I propose to be Harold.
All right. So if the council wants to make a motion on the three they would like to narrow it down to, and then I'll vote on that. I shared this already with a few people, but this is such an uncomfortable thing to do. I think this is the fourth time I've done this, and it's this job interview where you have to interview everybody at once, and then you have to talk about them in front of them. So hopefully you understand that this is an awkward process. But okay, so let's do that. Let's have everybody in the third three, and we'll see you in the top three over there. So we'll start with Councilmember Davis.
Okay, first off, I'd like to say thank you, all 11 of you, for participating. And if you don't get selected tonight, there's plenty of places to serve in the community. I mean, we have the we have committees, we have planning commission, we have park and beautification committees that all need people like you, like every one of you. I am so impressed. I can't tell you how impressed I am tonight. Having said that, I will like to make my three: Craig Clemens, Brian Miller, and Maurice.
Thank you.
My three are Craig Hansen, Kelly Smith, and Brian Miller.
Councilmember Reed.
Do we have to limit it to three?
Yes,
we do.
Sorry.
So I want to thank everybody coming out. Some general, some of you I don't that I appreciate. My three are going to be Brian Miller, Maurice Navarro, and David Briss.
Thank you.
Number one,
sir. All right. Yeah, thank you, everybody. It's a very interesting experience we've already. I'll go with Brian Miller, Kelly Smith, and Craig Hansen.
All right, so based on that, our three candidates looks like will be Brian Miller, Craig Hansen, and Kelly Smith. Somebody wants to make a motion to narrow it down to those three?
I'd like to make a motion that we narrow it to
Brian Miller.
Johnson.
Oh, sorry. Actually, it was going to be four. Kelly Smith and Maurice Navarro. Sorry, Maurice. Okay, so that we can let's do it to four because it's a tie. So
Maurice.
So Craig Hansen, Brian Miller, Maurice Navarro, and Kelly Smith.
Kelly Smith was the one I meant. Just another thing I want to say. Before I ran for council, I tried to be appointed once, and I didn't make it. Just so, you don't make it, there's hope.
All right, give a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right, all in favor? Any opposed? All right, thank you so much, candidates. Let's go ahead and just have them in the front row now. We'll have you on the left side. Mr. Miller, Mr. Hansen, Mr. Dowd, and Mrs.
Did you go to the zone first?
No, I didn't. It was like my first turn.
You will need the microphone. That's
okay. All right. Thank you, candidates. Okay, so we've narrowed it down to four. So, council, I'm going to open it back up to you for additional questions. Candidates will keep it the same, where each one of you will have 1 minute to answer. Well, at this point, council can ask questions specifically of candidates. If that's the case, council just lets me know, or let the candidates know if you just want one particular candidate to ask a question.
Yeah, we're going to all start. So we have five precincts within the city. Are you in favor or not in favor, or does it not matter if we actually divide up the council spots into just precincts?
Do you want that for everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So
where did my phone go?
No, I don't. But I want you to speak very loudly.
Should the five different precincts be represented individually?
That's interesting because we have five and we've got the five seats. So, that one's a hard one for me because I feel like we've got a lot of talent in the city and a lot of interest, and so it might be tough to get somebody in one particular area, maybe that's just strong in others. So I think that I would like to leave it the way it is for me, just a general representation.
My answer is no. We're not big enough. It's not ideal to have, a vast majority of residents come from one neighborhood or something like that. But frankly, in the elections that I've been here, there's precincts where there's no candidates. There's not the same interest. And if we're trying to scrape the barrel to get anybody to come from that district, that's a problem. In a bigger city, it makes sense. But at about 10,000 people, we're frankly too small.
I'm also going to say no. For one of the reasons that I understand, there's pretty uneven turnout between the precincts, and some of the precincts have very low turnout. And I also wonder about good candidates for people in the precincts. Obviously, like it's been said, you don't want all to come from one end or one neighborhood in the city, but I just don't know how to figure it out.
I think ideally it would be nice to have that kind of representation, but from my experience with having gone all over the neighborhoods and talking to people, there's some that are a lot more involved than others and participate a lot more than others. So I don't think it's realistic for us right now, but it would be ideal. I think that would be a nice way to go, but we just don't have that kind of representation. But to help get to that point, I would like it that we did have communication. We try to hear it out and try to get them to be a little bit more vocal and so forth. And I felt like that was one thing that I learned, was that some people felt they couldn't communicate, or they didn't know how to, because some of the older areas, they don't work on social media and so forth. So I think we could just figure out a way to try to get more people involved, and we could get to that point. We're just not good at that.
Additional questions from the council?
I have a question. So along the lines of what you expressed, with people not feeling like they have a voice on the council, when everybody go ahead and answer, how would you discover the opinions of other areas represent those? How do you determine how to vote based on what's your social strategy?
Yeah, some of the older areas, they definitely prefer more grassroots effort, of course, that's also a lot very time consuming, but I think mayors to those areas and certain areas that are very well known to participate. So I think we have to understand our community and where they're at, and so just sort of try to reach out in a way that best fits each area. But of course, if it's fine line, because then we feel like maybe we're making 90% on a certain area. It was not easy. I mean, what I did was knock on people's doors, make phone calls, and so forth. But I know we have very important issues. I think we should make an effort to try to get everybody. But I think that was something that was difficult. But I think as city council members to participate and to be an example, I think helps out a lot.
So I think I just make myself available. I know I have a lot of flexibility in my work to be able to meet and to talk to people. I know we have a pretty vibrant social media community in the city. I don't really participate in that, but I would open myself up to that. I know people self-select on that, and so I would just find ways to meet people. I'm out a lot around my neighborhood. I like exploring through the city, especially on the foothills, looking for stuff. It's a great way to meet people in different places. But I mean, really, with what I'm doing right now, anyone can call me anytime and I can take a call. So I would be very available for anyone to talk to, come to your house, whatever.
As our elected officials make themselves available, I think that residents do appreciate that, even if they don't take advantage of it. At that point, if the opportunities are made available, then it's really, you can lead them to water, but you can't force them to drink. For me, I think that with the technology available for doing resident surveys, I think we should take advantage of that and have more consistent resident surveys. They're not very expensive. We get a lot of information and have analytics run that information. And I think having community open houses, even if we went to each of the precincts or each region of our city and scheduled basically kind of a city get together, you know, on a Saturday, I realize that there's not going to be that many people that show up. But if you start making it a family event, you know, having something for the kids and stuff, where it's just kind of a casual meet and greet where people can connect with their representatives. Of course, they have to choose to do that, but make yourself available.
Well, I agree with all of that. I think that what I'm hearing is that we need more than the one-pronged approach. So we need social media, we need those meetings where we invite people to come, and again, we can't always get them to come, but I think they still get a good feel from the city if we're asking for that input and we're having those opportunities. And then if they say, well, I didn't participate, their neighbor can say that they didn't have them, and they can tell them last night, and you didn't go or you didn't fill out your survey. And with the surveys, I think also responding back to them and letting them know what the results of the survey were, so that people know how their neighbors are feeling about things. So we publish that as much as we advertise the survey, we advertise what the results were. And I'd also love to see us go to live streaming and posting our meetings on YouTube. I know American Post did that recently, and it's been really well received, and allowed other people to do it too. And I think it's another way for people to feel connected, and then they can be here.
Here's a
quick
question. What do you think the role of city government should be? And do you think our city oversteps or understeps its bounds? Should the city be doing more or less than the people?
I do recognize that there's a difference between the role of government from national and state and local. Local is stretching, doing a few more things for us and a few more quality of life things. So rec programs, city events, those sorts of things. It makes people want to live in the things, and you know, things that are a little more intangible. And then the police services, and there are water services, and all those sorts of things. But more of a city government is more of a quality of life, thinking about more and more.
I agree with Kelly. The city is the closest government to the people. It's most in tune to what the residents' needs and desires are. People don't want to live in a place that's been stripped down to bare necessities. I'm not moving there. I don't think most of us are moving there. We want a place that fits our needs. If we're a family community, we have to provide opportunities for families to recreate, to enjoy each other. The city, its job is to make it a place where people want to live. That means it's fun, it's safe, it's fiscally responsible, but still provides opportunities. And that's what Cedar Hills has done a really good job. I think that right now we're really in that balance. I think that there's some you know, maybe some minor things that we could do better or do less, but we've really found that balance here in Cedar Hills.
So the saying is all politics is local, and you don't get much more vocal than city council. And, you know, and having spent time in like the legislature was eye-opening how little, you know, federal has to do your deal, how more state has to do your deal. But at the city level, your parks, your zoning, your planning, all the things you see, how many nice neighborhoods starts on the city level. I don't think Cedar Hills overstepped its bounds at all. It's a place where people want to live. Even in my neighborhood, we've had some people leave recently. Where do they bring their kids back to? Sometimes on a daily basis, they bring back to Cedar Hills because of the kind of city that we've created. I think they've done a good job. I hope they continue to do a good job.
Yeah, there are definitely different levels of government and different hazards forms and so forth. And so it's per city, state, or federal. And I agree that city is the one, city level is definitely the closest to the people. Maybe, you know, a city would know what its people would need. But I also believe that if we can, we should motivate the people to initiate these programs. But that means that we need to allow our facilities to be used, to be accessible to these people. And I think that's also reminding people that we have this wonderful clubhouse here in our city, use it a little more often, get people, hey, that's right, we have a golf course, and that motivates more people to come and use it as well. Again, it's all about trying to help our situation that we have now and try to solve it. But let's motivate. I would like to see our people be more, to initiate these things, to run these programs, but I think the city should help facilitate that. I can keep going.
Actually, no, I think they've answered my questions very well. Thank you.
Can you just tell me what you've done and what committees you've been on are currently serving on in Cedar Hills? We'll start with three.
Yeah, so the way that I've contributed to my community for the past few years, and again, I've been living here for just a little over 3 years, but my writer is a part of our association, Homeowners Association, and so I've been on the board for the last almost 2.5 years. I didn't know how to say no, and there were a few months of moving in, and I was, okay, sure, I want to help, I want to participate. And then for the last year and a half, I've been serving as president there, and so I've been there having to deal with my little problems, not even compared to what you guys have to deal with, but trying to create our clubhouse and trying to motivate, do things to facilitate so our members have a place to have a gym, to have their activities and so forth. But we let them run those programs in some sense, so we provide an area where they can do those things. But I feel like that's the way I've been able to contribute for the last few years. But like was mentioned here, even if it's not the city council, I promised this even while I was running, despite what would happen, I would be more a part of this and to be part of the city level. So I hope to be part of any of those committees I remember.
I was on the, or still, I don't know the status of the Citizens Advisory General Plan Committee. It's gone.
It was disbanded.
Okay, it was disbanded. Well, I was on that one for a while until I disbanded. And now I have the Board of Adjustments.
So within a few months of moving here, I also became a member of the General Plan Advisory, Citizens Advisory Committee. I've served on the Planning Commission for the last 2 years. I currently serve on the Utah County Board of Adjustment, which deals with land use and conditional use exceptions. I'm also the precinct chair for the Republican Party where I live, and recently elected the education officer for the legislative district. I volunteer at all the options, many of the opportunities that show up in the newsletter. Like I said before, the family festival, beautification service days, you can typically find that.
I don't currently sit on any committees in the slowly weaning myself out of some big assignments that I've had to previously. I am a county delegate and then the
education. Thank you. All right, Council Member Kelser. No additional questions.
All right, so Council, at this time, you're free to discuss the four options and then when you're ready, you're still going to make the motion.
Well, shall we discuss?
Once again, I mean, the four gets harder and harder.
Yeah, this is awful. And I've sat there, so I understand this is worse. This is awful. But I appreciate you. You're all highly qualified to do this. Everybody who came tonight, I'm overwhelmed with the abilities that you have, and I'm very impressed. And any other questions? You've made it very difficult.
So 4 years ago or so, maybe with Sitch, and I don't know, a long time ago, I was in this and I got voted out in the early rounds. You know, I think I made it through round one, but Dan and Paul and I never did that.
Yeah,
so it was 6 years ago. So this is a very difficult decision. And even narrowing it down to four, all I can say is please keep going. You know, a couple years later, 4 years later, the elections came in, and here I am, and, you know, 2 years later, there we are. So, I commend all 11 that showed up. You all have strengths and weaknesses. Tonight, my vote is going to be based on my last question, because everybody is so close, but it's what you contributed to see if is how I'm going to go.
Are
you ready to make a motion, or do you want to? Oh, Ben, speak, and if he doesn't have anything, then I can
make a motion too, but I'll let Ben speak.
Then, yeah, go ahead.
Can I just stare at his names for a few minutes? incredible. I'm blown away. I'm trying to turn the side here. Let you guys make a motion.
Ben and I came on together, so, and we sat in the same chairs and both got denied. So. And I think I went out in the first.
Yeah, so you guys made a lot more than I did the first night.
But you know, Daniel Zappala was a very good council member. And he was not here tonight as he gives up his seat, but he contributed a lot to our city. And I want to say that publicly, even though he's not here. Could put that in the records. I knew Daniel. I lived with him in Oregon, believe it or not, and then we connected. We both ended up in Cedar Hills years later. It's crazy what a small world is. Anyway, so I would like to make a motion that we appoint Brian Miller as the council.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
This one, Mr. Miller and Mr. Wright, you both have been appointed. Do we need to do a roll call vote? Or just...
Yes.
Yes, okay. So I'll start with Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson. Aye. Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
It was unanimous. Congratulations, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
I can't guarantee how clean it is.
Thank you.
Here.
All right, so we're going to go. If everybody can please have a seat, we're going to go ahead and do the swearing in.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of this state.
The Constitution of this state.
And the laws and the ordinances.
And the laws and the ordinances.
Of the city of Cedar Hills.
Of the city of Cedar Hills.
And that I will discharge the duties.
That I will discharge the duties.
Of my office.
Of my office.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
All right, council, we'll take a 10-minute break and meet back here at 8:30.
To item number nine, which is a review action item on a resolution making assignments to members of the city council, staff, and residents of certain boards, committees, and entities.
We need to do number eight.
We're going to do, sorry. I'm just going to pass it over.
I'm not missing meetings.
I'm not missing meetings. Okay, we're going to do item number eight, which is the appointment of a mayor pro tem. And it looks like Mr. Rubin is presenting.
Yeah, this is a position that rotates to the council. Each council member usually, typically, once during their term, quarter term, they get to be appointed as mayor pro tem. So this year, the responsibility falls on Councilmember Bailey.
I'll try not to miss any meetings. All right, do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion. I'd like to make a motion to elect Councilmember Ben Bailey as mayor pro tem, who shall have all the powers and duties of the mayor during her absence, disability, or refusal to act according to the state and city codes.
Thank you. I have a second.
A second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, congratulations, Councilmember Bailey. All right, so we will move on to item number nine. This one is the review action on resolution making assignments.
Yeah, so this is a resolution assigning members of staff, council member, and mayor to various boards that are required to have positions in various boards throughout the valley and in our community that are required to be filled. A list was sent out with the proposed appointments, and in some cases, some alternates. So are there any questions? Is there any discussion on this? We now know that on the beautification, recreation, parks, and trails, where it says new council member, we can put in Councilmember Miller. Any other questions? Feedback?
Councilmember Miller, are those two assignments doable for you? Parks and Trails and Parks and Events.
Yeah, I'm not aware of what time they meet and which days.
We're going to talk about that. We might be modifying that.
Yeah, so that might be fine. Okay. That should be fine.
Okay.
So one thing let me point out for a statement. In the past, we've done finance committee in two separate ways. 2 years ago, you recall, and you're previous to that, there were two council members that were assigned to the finance committee. The finance committee meets with staff and the run-up to the budget season. They meet periodically, maybe about once a month, or as needed, to discuss various budget matters. In the past, there were two ways we've done this. There's been two council members that were assigned. And last year, there were kind of like open, if you'd like to attend this finance committee meeting, please let us know. And sometimes there weren't any council members that went. What we like to do is have one person assigned and then have a rotating position so that if there's an issue that you feel very passionate about, let's say you're very passionate about the motor vehicle rule, then you can attend that budget meeting in preparation and share your thoughts. But we'd like to have one council member assigned and that will be council member elsewhere. So any feedback on that? This is something we're going to try this year. We've never tried this before. I feel like it might be a good compromise between the two styles.
I like that setup. And then just to add, we found out that we can have an alternate on the Lone Depot Safety District Board, which I don't think we were aware of before. So we know we can, and as a voting member, so if Councilmember Geddes is unable to go, then Councilmember Anderson can attend on his behalf, or by hand. And then a new assignment this year is the Legislative Policy Committee. That is through the Utopia Cities and Towns, and the Legislative Policy Committee is really the committee that gives ULCT their monitors for a lot of free votes. And so we're adding that assignment to the end of this year as well. Any questions from council? If not, I'll take a motion.
I move that we approve resolution number 1-2-2018, resolution assigning members of the city council, staff, and residents of the city of Cedar Hills, Utah, to certain boards, committees, and committees as outlined.
All right.
As outlined.
Do I have a second? I second. All right. Going to do a roll call vote. Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Councilmember
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
All right, that passes.
And we will move on to item number 10, which is special amendments to the city code relating to ground mounted renewable energy systems, and this is a discussion item.
Yeah. The Planning Commission discussed this for a number of months. It came to our attention in the past, we passed code that was 10.538, it was renewable energy systems, and this was both wind and solar systems, both ground mounted and rooftop mounted. Well, before that code was passed, the reason, kind of the genesis of that code was that we had an application for ground mounted solar that was, trying to make a good word here, big. And it obtrusive would be another good word. But because we didn't have any code related to renewable energy systems, we had to treat it almost like an accessory building, given the same setback, given the same height requirements. So the city at that point said we need to address this if we're seeing one more applications come in. So we passed the code. Well, we needed to refine the renewable energy systems code to maybe reduce the negative impact that ground mounted solar could specifically have on neighboring residential units. So what we wanted to do was to kind of mold the code in a way that allowed people to do this in certain zones, but at the same time restricted it in such a way that it didn't become a nuisance or a burden on those around them. So what the code does limit height requirement to 15, a maximum of 15 feet, and gives a formula based for a setback that is meant to reduce the impact on those around. So you couldn't put a 15-foot ground-mounted solar structure right in your property line at this point. It also gives some other provisions such as fencing, safety, and support and removal. What questions? And like Mayor Reese said, this is a discussion item. This will come back in the next meeting as a review action. Require a public hearing as it relates to change. So, what direction can you give staff, if any? Are any thoughts, any concerns?
No, I have thoughts.
So let's hear it.
I think that ground mounted solar should be banned in the city of Seattle. I think it is visually offensive. I think it goes against everything that we have in our general plan. To provide this Arcadian lifestyle that we have in Cedar Hills, this rural lifestyle, it's too industrial. I think it should, I don't think there's any setback that would be appropriate to make it so that it's palatable to any neighbor. And I have a yard where nobody would see it, I would still never put that in my yard. It is too industrial, it doesn't fit with the feel of Cedar Hills, and I don't think we should approve it at all. I appreciate the Planning Commission's efforts. They have gone above and beyond to make the code, I don't know what the word, acceptable. If we were going to have ground mounted solar, they've really put a lot of work into it. They've been very conscientious, and they've done what we asked to come up with some sort of code for this. But I honestly think that ground mounted solar should not be allowed in Cedar Hills.
Couple of things to add to that. The Planning Commission was not unanimous in their approval of this code. There were some that didn't like the idea of ground mounted solar. I believe you just made one of them a council member. And Chairman Griggs is here, seat's down, to answer any questions or concerns from the Planning Commission as well. But this was a code that it took a long time because there wasn't a lot of. There are a lot of different visions on how this should proceed as far as it relates to ground mounted solar.
What requests are we getting for this?
None. But the problem is we did get one and we weren't prepared for it. So it became something like a nuisance. It's a nuisance in the area. So where we see that, we want to be ahead of the game. I don't know if you're through. Is it
Lehigh.
So you don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that we want to get ahead of when we become aware of deficiencies in our code. We try to stay proactive on that, even though this is a reaction.
So my opinion is there's not a big demand out there. Obviously, we've only got one out of 25 phones. I echo what Brian has said, but I'm guessing he doesn't like it. And things, with rooftop mounted solar, that is adequate enough right now for someone to power their home or whatnot. I'm not a solar engineer, but that's very popular. A lot of homes do have roof mounted. I can't agree with things.
Yeah, I was one of the planning commission that's not in favor of this. And it's balancing between personal property rights. You have to understand that people, you know, own their land, and they, you know, to a degree should be able to do what they think is fit and best for on their land. At the same time, and I'm also very in favor of renewable energy resources, and I think we should be promoting that in the best and most appropriate way. However, I've yet to see ground mounted one that would not make their neighbors complain, or at least if I was the neighbor to it. Nothing that would, it's unsightly, it's industrial, unless you have a half acre or an acre and it's smack dab right in the middle of it and it's not above the fence line.
You can't do that.
Can we leave that door open?
We have to leave the door open by now.
Just right here.
It won't make that bigger. They're almost done.
I'm sure.
Yeah. We're used to this. Happens all the time.
I'll try to speak more into the microphone so everyone can hear us.
So that's where I stand.
So I haven't been involved with the planning commission on this, but I tend to agree that, you know, it is a politically correct issue to have solar and renewable energy out there. But I agree. I have yet to see an issue where it's needed. I mean, you can't. Rocky Mountain Power. Who worked for Rocky Mountain?
It was Steve Thomas.
Oh yeah, he left. But they don't even allow you to, they don't buy everything back yet. And so
you're producing excess.
You're getting excess for no reason other than to annoy your neighbors or whatever. And I think we should just ban it and just not allow it. Well, it sounds politically incorrect, but
let me ask this.
We're
talking about
build yourself a gazebo and put it on the gazebo's roof. I don't care. That's fine. That would be acceptable.
Believe it or not, the city does have, we have some ground mounted solar. It's on our water tanks. It powers the SCADA system that allows us to read.
Yeah, but that's an industrial area.
Nobody knows it's there until I just said it's there. So what we're talking about are these giant panels that are meant to, you know, generate power.
Right, and they're all at the weird angles.
Not
and
residential. Got,
yeah.
Okay, so I guess rather than just saying outright ban, I think the code needs to be revolved in this drive, which I don't recognize our train.
Could we keep it as a conditional use? And if someone has a legit lot that
if you do it as a conditional use, it's assumed it's a permitted use as long as it meets these conditions. So this, in the code that they're proposing right now, it is a conditional use. And, you know, it's a conditional use, and they're saying it's only allowed in the R120 and the R115,000 zone. So if you live on a smaller lot, if you live in a tight neighborhood or more dense neighborhood,
there's not too many homes in the neighborhood.
So they try to take that into consideration and build the code around, build some length around the code that really does handcuff who can do it and where they can do it.
So, Chairman Briggs, as a representative from the Planning Commission, you say that they weren't in consensus. Can you explain how the Planning Commission came up with what they did, or there were some that felt we should allow it? So,
I think those two dissenting votes, Mark and Miller, so I recall, and some others on the commission. I mean, it came before the commission, and as such, we tried to get balance to the rights of the property owners and mitigate the impact on other property owners. And we attempted to mitigate those concerns by allowing it in certain zones we identified, setback requirements. So it's kind of a balance between the property rights both in the land and within the neighbors. That's kind of how we have about it. I will say that there are definitely ground mounted city ones. There's one right by my house, or this power distribution system in the case. So I know there's city ones throughout the city that are not being intrusive. They're just all over. You might check the apps level for that. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you. So what happens to those who are only one house that currently has it?
They'd be grandfathered in.
Oh, your neighborhood. Oh,
they're the only ones that are affected in the whole city by this kind of thing.
Yeah, Kelly was kind of give us send us some pictures in there.
Yeah, see the headlights. I understand.
At least they don't make noise.
Mayor, does that make them moment?
Absolutely.
Sorry, one of the thoughts I had is that I go back to the lands and the building capacity is that there are ground-mounted solar that is small that probably don't want to include language or may not want to, that has to do with fountains, lighting, landscaping, lighting, pet accessories, this type of stuff that is a looking at language. I think they do have to take into consideration size possibilities.
That's good point. A lot of people have those lights that they stick in the landscaping versus, and technically they're solar powered.
I think they were doing smart versus that were
using. Is it possible? We had a question that if they got banned, if our neighbor wanted to move his, which we'd love for him to do, would he be able to move them? Then he'd be under the new regulations where you can have solar, which is going to discourage him from ever moving them from our property line, which they currently fit right on our property line.
I understand what you're saying.
Can we add something to the whole?
I think it's a good question for our
research.
Any city could work with them on that. I think that's reasonable. I think that's pragmatic. So if that was something that they would be willing to do, knowing that, I guess they're the only ones that could sit down and listen.
Grandfathering. Mm-hmm. You can carve out and say, no, it's our grandfather. But, you know,
if they're willing to do that, I'd love to talk to you.
We'd love to, too.
Any other comments from council? So if I'm understanding correctly, it appears that the feedback is to create language that ground mounted solar to power a home, basically, are not going to be allowed in the city. The exception will be made for those small units that are powering the lights or
as accessories, whatever. Yard accessories.
All right, and then come back to staff, and then we'll come back. We'll go back to planning commission, I'll be first, and then come back to staff. First, to council. We will move on then to item number 11, which is a discussion on artificial turf, amending requirements of Cedar Hills Code 10.5.7 and state development standards.
This is also an item that the planning commission is going to a little bit of time on. And it came back to the city council, so the city planning commission was recommending that it did not allow that. And the city council, based on the direction that the city is trying to get residents to be more water conscious, conserve more water, that they draft language to allow it. So the planning commission worked on this for a number of months. And this is the code that they came up with, the artificial turf code. You can see that it allows it in every zone except for the shopping center zone, because it's important to maintain the livelihood of the commercial area. But then, working with the code that was proposed by Chairman Griggs and the staff, we broke the code into three separate kind of uses, not uses, but requirements. There's requirements on the general appearance, that's the first section. There's a requirements on how it's to be installed, that's the second section. And the third section is the requirements that the owner has to maintain. And this is, I hope you had a chance to go through that. I think the Planning Commission felt like this was a reasonable accommodation. We had a resident that actually came to the City Council and asked
for this to be considered. I think in the meantime, they've gone ahead and installed it. But I think as we have more and more of a demand on water, this is going to be something that more and more people may consider. So we want to have this code that allows the staff to help or provide guidance to residents that want to do this, to do it properly.
What was the justification for not allowing it in at C1 road?
I think it was just a general thing, so I didn't have to allow. Now, Christopher, I think we could say that there was a mini golf, and they had a choice for the idea that there would be an exception for something like that, but areas where there was needed, or any areas where there's a great space requirement that was still required, live.
Thoughts, feedback, council?
Well, that was my first comment. Like in a really narrow strip in a commercial center, that's the perfect place for it. But I understand most of them aren't putting grass there anyway. They're escaping it, so I don't think it really matters.
And I think this is something that the city needs to really consider on their own green strips or park strips. Are there areas that we can consider our own water and be good stewards and preach and kind of convert that into a situation?
I don't agree with that.
I mean, I think the biggest complaint is getting a little off topic, but the biggest complaint we get in summer about the city sprinklers are the sprinklers that are on the park
streets. Sure, spraying over spraying the streets, absolutely.
One comment that came up to me earlier tonight was that this resident had a neighbor who installed artificial turf, and she said that they actually did it. Like, it was like a quilt. She said some of it's going one direction, some of it's going another. So, and we don't really address that here. Maybe that's what we need to do as well, address that, the look that it's all going in a uniform direction, so it doesn't look like it's a patchwork.
Well, what defines artificial turf? I mean,
I guess there's a green lifelike individual choice of black, blade of glass. It's on the ordinance down by the number 3.
Yeah, as I read through it, I agree with Jenny. That's the only thing I thought was lacking is that all the blades need to go in the same direction because I have seen that patchwork in my yard and it's awful. So I don't think that artificial turf is attractive, but I love the idea of water conservation. And if somebody wants to put that on that care mark.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's really a function of the turf you put. There are some very, very good looking turfs.
Mm-hmm.
They're very expensive, the better looking ones are. But there are some that you would probably not even know are artificial.
Yeah, the old AstroTurf, that's ugly.
Yeah, it's ugly.
But that's from the 70s. Yeah. But the modern stuff.
I mean, half of the football games you saw this weekend were played on artificial.
But
you would have known.
But that's the thing to consider, that this is the installation of football field is very different than the installation for residential type use. The black rubber got really hot. You've seen recent news articles about that. The residential ones are a little bit different. They don't go as high in temperature.
I know it's addressed in here, and again, this is another thing where balancing property rights, also water conservation, but if I'm a neighbor and my neighbor puts this in, am I happy about it? Well, it depends. If they spend the money to do it right, you know, maybe not, but if it's done cheaply and just barely getting by through our code, I wouldn't be happy about it. Another concern that I had is just the maintenance stating that it has to be like new condition, any fading, discoloration, deterioration. I mean, that's a slow process, and then the next thing, you know, one day you blink your eyes and it looks terrible. And then the city would have to come in and basically find them what daily, you know, if they decide that they're in violation.
Monthly. It'd be the same as someone that had a fence.
Okay. And so, you know, there would have to be periodic checks and there'd have to be a standard and, you know, one day it's okay and then the next day it's not okay and the city's requiring you to replace it. It's just a new experience for the city. Obviously, there's not a huge demand there too. In the city, maybe like three.
Yeah.
But maybe more and more people will do it. Water is a condition resource. But that's a concern that I think that we should be aware of.
So I have a question. So if we allow this artificial turf, do they have to get a permit for it so that we know where all the turf is going in so we can monitor?
Yeah. They would get a permit that would show, like an installation, they would show that the base of the building, what it would look like. They would show the depth of the pile height, they would show the types of blade, they would show basically the manufacturer's report when they're installed.
But that's an interesting. Where in our code do we require a landscape plan?
We don't. Not for grass. We're just happy that they put it in.
Right, I know. So where now, how are you going to now require, because someone's going to landscape his front yard, but instead of where it says, well, we don't, the city doesn't even look at a plan, really, that says landscaping, although we have a requirement that it has to be within 6 months or something like that.
Within a year, but residential buildings don't ever submit landscaping.
Right, that's my point. How are you?
You're right. This is new territory. Brian said it right. This is something where the city is kind of going on a new.
So maybe we need to have as far when they pull a building permit, if at the time that you put in your landscaping, you were going to put artificial turf, please be aware that the city has a guidelines or a code for this artificial turf.
Yeah. I don't want to pull out their sod and put in artificial turf as soon as it's allowed. There has to be some way to keep track of where this is going in, so we can. I would imagine that it's going to have to be monitored just the same way that any last meeting. I mean, we have OE ordinance and all of that kind of maintenance laws, and we find out about instances as we hear from others who are code enforcement officers. So I would imagine it's going to be the same process.
Yeah,
I mean, I like the starting point, but I imagine there will be some tweaks to it.
Well, that's some discussion tonight.
Because I know there's some discussion too about front yard versus backyard. I think it's really only
right now
important
you can
for front yard.
You can put anything in your backyard.
True.
You can.
But it does say on here that you can put any pile size in your backyard or whatever.
Yeah.
But who? Do we don't really care.
Do you want to have someone reach out to the Ogden where we got this code from?
Initially, the code came from Ogden, and this is a lot of this from a number of different resources.
Okay, so maybe
the Ogden may have an installation from the Ogden.
It seems like
that's the big question I have is the process. You're right, this isn't something. It's probably something where people go ahead and install it, and then the city finds out if you got it wrong, and also there's. You don't want to be punitive in that case, but you want people to be aware that this is code that the city's passed. So we'll have to look into that.
Any other discussion? All right, then we will move on to item number 12. This is a review action on amendments to the city code Title 7, Chapter 2C, Section 2, related to sewer system. And
This is simply to match state code. Currently, our ordinance requires that if you're within 500 feet of a sewer line, that you have to connect. State code says the baseline quote we received from engineers in state, they don't feel like this should change the regulation here in our state code.
Should we go less?
I don't think so.
Any questions from council? If not, I will take a motion. I'll make a motion to approve ordinance 1-02-2018-B, amending city renewals resolution A. Thank you. Amending city renewals code 7-2C-2, changing the requirement from 500 feet to 300 feet. Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right, and we will do a roll call vote. Councilmember Dennis.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Bailey.
Yes.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
All right, that passes. We will move on to item 13. This is a review action on a resolution in support of the Murdoch Connector Road.
Yeah, this is the second time that we've done this. We did it last January. This is honestly, and I'm speaking for me, this staff's perspective, but this to me is compared to future development in the city's parking district. I've had calls from current business owners down there asking, we've been told that this road is happening, when is it happening? You know, it's always, well, we're hoping it's in the next few years. Well, I think their business plans rely on that road being built and that state development center and being developed as it's being proposed. So it brings more east-west traffic to the city's commercial site. I feel that it would be an amenity to the city as far as driving to that portion of Highland rather than having to go clear out to SR92 and around to drop the kids off at Mountain Ridge Junior High. It significantly saves a lot of time. So for residents of Cedar Hills, I feel like this is something that really benefits our residents. You can see in the resolution, you can see the whereas and it highlights all of the various benefits in the city, saving time, saving on CO2 emissions, decreasing public safety response times, also how it benefits the commercial zone. It was approved in the master plan and the Highland General Plan. And then the last big hang-up is that people's vision of what the road ultimately will be. Some people view it as a
neighborhood road.
Neighborhood, 25-mile-an-hour road. We've always kind of seen it as a collector road, coming from Canyon Road down through Harvey and then Murdoch Canal. We'd like to see it be probably at least 30, 35.
So that's, we don't choose that, correct?
No, it's just, that's why it's a resolution. It's just indicating to those that do approve it that this is what we feel like this is best route for it. There's been some discussion that if it's not a collector road, if it's not designated as a 30, 35 mile an hour road, then NAG funding will go towards it. But what we've heard otherwise is that they're planning on spending some of those NPO funds to put this road in because they feel like it is a bad. Even if it were a 25 mile an hour road, they would still support it.
The only thing I would add is that this resolution of wording came from Mayor Matt of Highland. I know also presented it to American Board of Finance as well.
The core of it is from Mayor Mann over at Highland. I added some of the whereas that I felt like were important to Cedar Hills that were from the resolution that was passed last year. I feel like they're important last year, they're important this year as well as the legislative body needs to.
So, and then Representative Kennedy and Senator Hunter at the state level have asked for these resolutions and emails from residents just showing support. So, if they are pushing for this in the legislative session, they can show the support as well. Questions, comments?
I certainly wholeheartedly support this, and I have for 17 years I've lived here. And it goes really two houses, and it will be two houses away from my house, and so I will get the brunt of this traffic, but it is such a necessary road.
So it will connect at North County Boulevard at Harvey and then turn through Highlands and connect Alpine Highway.
So I saw that, but how is this going to be a three lane, four lane, two lane?
Right now, the State Developmental Center, they're the ones who really get to see on this. They want it to be a two lane road. They're expressed concern with the closeness to the Developmental Center, and so they are really pushing for a two lane three and a half per hour
road. No, it won't be a collector road. I've heard some arguments in the state that, you know, it's due to proximity to their site. They don't want a busy road, but I mean, they have a five lane highway.
Are there pedestrians or people on foot where this road would be?
They've expressed that sometimes they have residents that escape.
Water.
They worry about that. But again, this is a further distance than North County Boulevard is from the development center.
And it really depends on how the state development plan actually gets planned out, master planned out. Because if you drive down along Harvey, you'll notice the city planned that road to not have driveways accessing off of it, so that as you're driving, you don't have to worry about people pulling in and pulling off in that manner, like you do on Canyon Road. I think the powers that be within the time Canyon Road was kind of first designed. I mean, I'm using the word design really loosely right now, but they didn't plan that. See, that's why you have a number of driveways accessing off. You know, well, the city saw this as a major east-west corridor for the city, and so you don't see driveways coming in, but you see access to developments. But it's important that for the city that this be a good one.
Yeah, I believe that we need, as a city, to encourage it, and obviously not fighting, but as big as possible. I personally think it's a catch wind that this road is there, and that is going to be
used.
Yeah, it's going to be used, and it's going to just get bottlenecked down, and it's going to be like the days of the 2002 Olympics when they only built the freeway 5, 6, 7 lanes down the point of the mountain, and then all of a sudden we're down to 3 lanes, and for those of us that live this side of the point of the mountain, it was terrible traffic to get through that. This is the same way. Once people catch wind that this east-west goes through, that doesn't matter if it's 2 lanes or 5 lanes. So my recommendation would be let's in our resolution, let's take it. We want a bigger road. I mean, not a massive.
Let's plan for the future.
Let's plan for the future. Let's plan that it's going to be used.
Well, we already have issues at 745 on Cedar Hills Drive and Cedar Hills Drive and then 4800 West for the high school traffic.
Yeah.
The plan at the Development Center is ultimately going to adopt needs to address that as well. Not just this east-west, but how students coming from that west side coming into the high school are ultimately going to get there. If they have a diagonal road on the master plan that I feel
right.
only contributes to the problem with CSM 3500 million.
Yes.
They have a number of issues they need to address.
Yeah, is that residential in here, or is that just commercial? Or?
It's a lot of residential. They're looking at, I want to say, the conceptual plan had 1,200 units.
Yeah, there's a lot of
high
density.
A lot of high density, in which is interesting for Highland because they're
the residents
here are the major dwelling unit. So this is half.
But yeah,
okay. It's a half. It is a half. It's large lots. This is not that.
No.
It's very dense.
So the state has mentioned on numerous times that they make no issue about that. They do not have to comply with Highland zoning ordinance. So it's state comes. City.
Yeah, we're going to look at that.
Yeah, we're going to look at that. And there's some discussion from the state as well about maybe annexing it into American Fork because the developmental center in American Fork and they would maybe like to just go in one city. But that's, again, not a thing to do with us.
I mean, either way, we've asked to be included in discussion because we feel like this impacts us in the city almost more than Highland.
Mm-hmm.
How well, comes in.
Generally, we even have an access to look at it. It even comes up to the Cedar Hills Drive as well. I mean, I know the east-west comes, but...
That's the diagonal road that I feel like is only going to contribute to the problem at 645.
But there again, that the one that's highlighted in green gets bottlenecked down, people are just going to go off to the diagonal one and come right up to Cedar Hills Drive. So we're going to have the same...
We talked to the project manager, Chandler United, and he actually mentioned at that meeting that they were pulling out that diagonal road.
So as meetings go forward, we want to make sure that those kind of concerns are addressed. And that diagonal road was something I brought up.
I guess my point is both, we're going to have two coming into Cedar Hills, not just one. We'll have two roads coming in.
And that's exactly why I made the statement that I feel like in some ways this affects Cedar Hills more than it affects Highland, even though it's currently in Highland.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, I will take the motion.
There's not a memo, but if you read the title, it's
first. And it's going to be resolution B.
Oh, I'll make the motion. Okay, I move that we approve resolution number 1-02, 2018. B. A resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, in support of the Utah State Developmental Center and the Murdoch Connector Road, wholeheartedly.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. Councilmember Bayless.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson. Aye. Councilmember Dooley. Councilmember Hilsley.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
All right, that passes. Thank you. And we will move on to our final agenda item, which is a discussion on the Canyon River Sewer Project. And I'll say Mr. Mai and Mr. Goodwin.
Yeah, I'm going to start. I'm going to turn the time over to you. Questions. I think this was the first item. This was last discussed in June, Denise, when you took office, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. This is one of the first items. So. Well, one of the problems we have with this area is that a lot of these homegrown septic systems, and we're starting to see a number of them fail. And this goes back to the sewer proposal that we just did. That came across the discrepancy in the code because we had a septic system that has failed, and we've been working with the resident and the property owner to try to alleviate that in the best way possible.
Well, 90% plans are done. We've sent the red lines into the county on how, on what our feedback is for this sewer line that we're proposing. Now, the sewer line, I'll let Jeff talk more about the details of it, but ultimately what we're trying to do is we need to get direction from the council on where we're going to go with this. It's a significant amount of money to service, was it 10, 9 residents? 16 connections. So it's a little more than I thought, but it's a lot of money. Right now, the county estimate is about $215,000 to run this sewer line. That's what the estimate is. That could very well change. On Friday, we received from the county, which is also down in the County Public Works Office, an interlocal agreement that the city would enter into to go out to bid for the project. Well, we're getting down to the end of the runway here. We have to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down of some sort. So that's kind of what this is only a discussion item right now, but we want you to consider it because it is a big decision because it will affect other water and sewer projects, of which we don't really have any major ones on the docket right now. However, as it is with water sewer projects, sometimes overnight these priorities change. Jeff, do you want to come up and give us some? And we wanted to give some background because we do have new council members tonight. I wanted to give them some, educate them on what the issue is. I'm going to turn it over to Jeff.
Oh, Mayor. Council, as per our last discussion on this and our instructions, to reduce the scope. To reduce the scope of the project by eliminating everything north of the Monson intersection on Canyon Road. This left approximately 1,700 lineal feet of new sewer main that we need to be put in. This is split into two parts. The south part, south end, which we calculate to be about 400 lineal feet, and the north end, which comes off Canyon Road and goes through Jen's Monson to 4100 west. So that's about 1300 feet. The south portion of that, we're estimating, if we was to take the total of their estimated cost and then do it by lineal feet, the south end is going to cost about $50,000 and would connect six laterals. And one of those laterals is going to propose division of the property, but it would only accommodate five current lots. The north end would have 10 laterals, and one of those would actually be a Pleasant Grove lot. And they're right on the corner, if we could service, and they have made contact with us that they would be interested in making a connection and even involve the boundary adjustment. But they have some interest in that. One of the issues is the Jens Monson connection. Most of those properties are non-developed frontages, and they're all of sizes that could be subdivided in the future. So we'd probably be putting in adequate laterals at this time, but may not meet future needs of that area. And one of the considerations is this would completely remove Jen Monson Road, and we have a whole rebuild. And we haven't done any proposed road projects this time, anticipating that the county would have already been working on this project, and we would then need funds to assist with the rebuild of Jens Monson to put the sewer line in. They don't have curb gutter, sidewalk, or, and they need new asphalt as it is. Looking at the ownership of the property there, Cedar Hills owns a large length of that right away, but it's only 32 feet. Not minimum standard is 42 feet. So we really don't have enough ownership of property to put the road in this time. There need to be some kind of boundary adjustments to that also. With all of these things being considered in the cost of the project, and the county wanting with this agreement that we'll be discussing next meeting, I think, they want a response in 14 days after the bids are received, which leaves us a very little time to discuss proposals or funding or what it is we want to do. We just wanted to get a joke on this and make you aware of some of the issues that we need to talk about. And one of the big considerations is the sewer line going from Canyon Road to Jim Monson. Manholes need to be approximately 18 feet deep, which is significant. In order to excavate that deep and get the manhole in there, it pretty much removed the width of Canyon Road to get equipment in there that deep.
Is that how deep the sewer is right now, out in Canyon right now?
Well, there is no sewer there, but...
But to get to pick up...
That's what the design is for.
That's really deep.
It's really deep.
Is that to accommodate gravity flow from the basement? Or could we shorten that and acquire ejector pumps?
Yeah.
We could.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the options we can look at. Because
I think that's always a practical option.
Yes.
Because most people don't put much in their basement.
But I think
explain that for those of us who haven't installed a sewer.
So most of the flow from the home is by gravity. However, there is the option of putting in an ejector pump, which would take the lower level of the home into the upper level of the home piping and then it'll drain by gravity. And that's an acceptable and common method. But to go that deep is to pick, that would allow them to pick up two east blocks on Jim's Monson because they sit down low. And I think it would only affect those two blocks when I'm looking at the elevations. On the south end, then the sewer is very shallow and it'll only be about 7 feet deep, which will be very close to even accommodating the west dwellings, the dwellings on the west side of Canyon Road. And one of those is ones we've been talking with, and they would have to put in a pump in order to accommodate their lower level.
So just to expand that from a filter standpoint, just so you understand that. So you can, the first thing a builder does when he builds a house, right, is he goes out and measures the depth of the sewer. And then he determines whether that sewer can blow out gravity for the basement or the whole house. So if you do have to put an ejector for your basement, which is generally only a very small amount of sewage, you generally have a bathroom or two in a basement. You don't really see
kitchens or emergency,
all sorts of stuff. So you don't see a lot of flow, but you can eject that up to a level. It doesn't have to go all the way up, but just the level of your of the main flow out. So it, you end up having to put a vault in the floor, like that will collect water. And then there is a mechanical electrical pump that sits in there. And they do fail. There are problems with them, but it's probably a $2,000 add, $2,500 add to the house, maybe a little bit more, depends. That's about what it is. But that's a lot cheaper than digging an 18-foot deep manhole all the way down. That's the fair house.
And it's their expense, not ours.
Right.
Calculating this out on the south end, we're looking at numbers of about $8,700 per connection, which is not unusual for a new development. But the north end, it's double that. We're $16,000 plus to put that in. And some of that is going to be because of the depth of this. May want to look at that.
This is another thing that I think the council needs to consider is that we can pay for this. However, two items is one, when we put the sewer line in, the requirement now is that it's going to be, if you're within 300 feet, you shall connect to a sewer line. Well, some of these people's septic systems have not failed. Well, do you wait for them to fail in order to connect them, or do you say, we just put in a sewer line, you need to connect? There's some people that you will get some, you say, you shall connect, you're going to get some pushback,
for sure.
However, I feel like if the city's going to expend $250,000 in good faith to put in a sewer line, it is my personal feeling that they should connect. Second, and it's been done in the past, it's been a number of years since the city did it. I believe it was in the 80s, and they did the bookkeeping by hand back then, but the North Meadows Special Improvement District was funded to get sewer connections to the people. Well, rather than the whole city paying for that, it was the neighborhood that made it. They had a meeting in the property and they paid for it on a monthly installments or quarterly installments. Now, the city can look at various options of how they fund this type of project if you choose to do it. It can be all out of we're just going to pay for it. It can be looking at establishing some sort of SID, special improvement district, in order to make sure that the residents pay for it themselves. There's hybrids. So those are things to consider. We're not proposing anything right now. We're just saying that these are the options the staff is looking at for this.
And in my opinion, SIDs are the most fair.
Well, when you build your home and if it's connected to the sewer, the cost of that connection is built into the home price.
Right.
It is. So there's different ways of looking at that. But I agree.
They're not uncommon. They're all over the state of Utah. They're in Eagle Mountain. They're in Lehigh. I mean, there's SIDs everywhere.
Yeah.
Of these 16 homes, how many are coming to us wanting to know where I have a sewer ring for?
Three? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a low number. But our concern, though, is that as we're seeing these septic systems fail on a more consistent basis, because that area is now in the 30 or 40 year range, they're getting, if the septic system fails and you call somebody to come out and service your utility, come out and service your pumps, they'll come out and they'll say, no, we're not going to service it, you're too close to the sewer. And that's the problem with one of the residents is having that now. He's had to work with the county on trying to get some sort of accommodation there. But the problem becomes that if you choose to not do it, and then in 2 years' time, if two more septic systems fail, there's a moratorium on the road, and we don't have any way to put that system in.
And it makes sense to me to do it now while they're doing the road, but my question is, on the SID, if we only have three of the 16,
Well, that's why, I mean, the city can really use a forceful hand here, or they can just choose to pay for it.
Someone still funds it.
That's for sure.
There have been rumors, I think somewhat confirmed sometimes, of midnight replacement of septic.
That's what I've been talking about.
I mean, you get some really kind of crazy thing, but they are at someone's desperate straits where they just simply almost philosophically believe in a septic system. I don't there are crazy things that happened in Northern Pleasant Grove in the past.
Yeah. And that's generally when we hear from them saying, we're going to boundary this.
And we would require every one of these to boundary adjust in the city of Cedar
Hills. Well, right now we're only talking about Cedar Hills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When we met with Pleasant Grove 8 months ago to explore the option of, you know, whether they're just going to be residents connecting or this view being a part of the project and got ultimate boundary adjustment, and they didn't feel like that was feasible.
So right now, those 16 residents, though, are they paying water and sewer fees even though they're not connected to sewer?
I believe one of them was, and they, I have to go look, I honestly don't know. They are paying water as well. The sewer fee, I have to go check. I don't know.
Cost you throughout $8,700 per connect, that would be their cost?
No, that's our cost. Unless the city decides to do some other funding option, like creating a special improvement district where you lean the property and ultimately they pay it over a portion of time to pay it back. The city's done it before, like I said, in North Meadows.
What's North Meadows? Which one is what?
It's the area of Ken Cromar.
Oh yeah.
So there is a precedent.
We have done it, and if there's precedent, it's a common practice. It's not uncommon. It just needs to be SIDs. Pleasant Grove has been talking about doing it when they put in their sewer line 4,000 more. And that sewer line, when they put it in, it's 20 feet then.
Yes.
It was a deep trench. To get that line.
On 10 months?
No, on 4,000. On the, if you come up on 9,600 more. If you look at it, it's got like six.
It's Spend Month. It's Spend Month.
Yeah, Spend. Okay, yeah.
Spend Month.
Six different road signs.
It's a road I drive every day, and I feel like I'm on a roller coaster every day.
Yeah,
no, that's not. Immediately after.
Yeah.
It's been fixed like four times now.
Because it's so deep.
Well, I mean, that road, you were putting a sewer line
under our sewer line. Line.
So in order to get the necessary depth, had to go down to 20 feet. It was a deep hole.
So I think at this point, you're really looking for direction from the council on whether or not we should do this sewer.
Well, I don't know that I'm looking for direction at this moment. We wanted you to be up to speed on what's happening and what's going to happen in the future, because we did get the interlocal agreement on Friday. We sent it out to Joel to have it reviewed today, and it's coming. There's going to have to be a decision made at some point. So we wanted to give you some background to some council members and then let you educate yourself as well.
So the process, if I'm getting this right, we're going to send out a bid, we'll get responses. We have 14 days to look forward at that point.
That's it for a party.
And since we haven't
signed
it yet, we can push back and ask for...
Well, I want to push back. We've already pushed back and said, you've got to give us more time. Sorry, it was unacceptable.
The question is, are getting you to this point?
Yes, you've got to give us more than 2 weeks. You know, so with such a new council, we want to make sure that you are aware of the circumstances and situation and what your options are going forward.
Thank you. Any questions for council? All right, then we will move on.
Just Councilman Anderson's question on the cost, if that was the total cost. That would be the city's cost for the main to run lateral to the property. But they would have a substantial cost, at least that might probably again.
On top of that.
Yeah, making their own connection depending on where the sewer's coming out of their building, if they need a pump or anything that could easily run that much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are finished, so I will take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we are finished.
That's a lot earlier than I thought we were going to be. I'm impressed, guys, but we don't.